You never know what you'll discover at the Discovery Zone at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. We're talking today with Sybil Holmes. She is the Early Childhood Education Coordinator here at the museum. What I love about the exhibit is that there's always something new, something wonderful for young kids. How did you get into this?
Interesting backstory about me. I have a background in early childhood special education. I worked in the classroom for a long time. When my youngest child left the nest, I decided, hey, why don't I do something fun? And so I took a job here as an actor. So my first job here at the museum was dressing up like an astronaut, going to Mars, teaching people all about space. I worked in the Expedition Health as a pirate, so.
Let's use our pirate voices for the rest of the podcast.
Right, matey, I'm all in for that one.
I always thought that pirates would love things that started with A, like Argyle socks.
Yay, Argyle.
Well, their favorite letter, what's their favorite letter?
C. They keep getting lost at C, matey.
That's awesome.
Makes no sense.
That's awesome. So you went from being an actress at the museum,
yes.
And then you became the early childhood education coordinator. Tell us a little bit about that job.
Half of the people that we see at the museum are under 5 years old. So we know that we're serving families and young children. The Discovery Zone has existed in some form for quite a few years, but at one point it was kind of like the Island of Misfit Toys. So like whatever we got done with during what temporary exhibition would flow into the Discovery Zone and just sort of exist there for a while. It was a super popular space with guests. And so probably 6 years ago, they decided to build a permanent exhibition for the Discovery Zone. They took all the things that people loved about the old Discovery Zone and just made it fresh and new and exciting. You know, the faces of the parents when they come into the space, I always talk about how you can just see kind of this relief on their face because throughout the rest of the museum, they're kind of like, oh, be careful here. Oh, I have to carry this. Oh, don't touch that. And when they come into the Discovery Zone, they're like, oh, now I can relax and let the kids just explore. So,
well, if you think about it, when kids come here when they're 10, 12, 14, they can read some of the placards, they can interact on an intellectual level with the different dioramas, the different displays. But if you're under five, how do you learn in a venue that is really meant for older kids and adults?
One of my favorite things is walking through the animal halls and watching how different age groups interact with what we have. And one of the most popular things for babies is just randomly pressing buttons.
Yes.
So that's just like a little microcosm of what they do. They touch, they feel, they explore. They do cause and effect things to their environment. And so there are aspects of the museum all around where our littlest learners can engage with our content, but the Discovery Zone was designed specifically for them. Everything in the space is something that you can interact with, you can pick up, you can move, you can test and see how it works.
Excellent.
So
how do you decide what's going to be discovered in the Discovery Zone?
The rest of the Discovery Zone was kind of built before I came on board. So we have some permanent parts of it. We have, you know, the dinosaur dig where they can dig for bones. We have the water table where they can, you know, experience splashing water everywhere. But the science kitchen is where we really get to work on our programming. We have themes that move in and out monthly to keep it fresh for our return visitors. Yesterday was so funny because I was in the space and there was a little girl and she had marker like all over her face.
Awesome.
And I talked to one of our work study students and said, did you see the little guy with the marker on their face? And she said, oh, that's Mary. She comes in every Monday. And so we have these return visitors that are here all the time. And so keeping that space fresh and engaging is super important to us. And so we have tried really hard to create these in-depth play scenarios where kids can experience science process skills within the form of play.
Your early childhood education background is that it isn't just simply playing like you would play at a playground. This is playing with a purpose. There is design elements behind what is offered there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because you can see play that doesn't have a purpose, and that's fine. But one important aspect of early childhood education is this idea of a skillfully mediated experience. And so you're providing the materials and the scenario where this rich play can happen. So right now what we have going on up in the Discovery Zone Science Kitchen is a party for our five senses.
Oh, nice.
And so when you walk into the space, it kind of looks like there's a birthday party going on already. And I know when I've had success, when people stop at the door and say, oh, are we supposed to go in here? Is this a party?
Nice.
And so we catch them at the door and say, yes, it's a party for everyone. Come on in. And the kids kind of know what to do already. They have that background experience of what happens at a party, and then they just sort of make it their own. We have a play on the pin the tail on the donkey, but it's the texture donkey. So you feel the texture, and then you find that texture on the donkey. So we're talking about our sense of touch. We have some smell tests where it's birthday party type ingredients that you might have when you're making a cake. One of our most popular games for this is the present shake. We've created a little game scenario where they can fill up boxes with various present items and then take it to their friends or their family and have them shake it and try to guess what's in it. So
Nice. It's
like this really immersive party experience where we're talking about our five senses and how we get information about the world.
And combining not only sensory, but also question asking and inferences and different things. You know, what is in the box? Can you tell by what it sounds like?
Yeah, really. And that's one of the things we're always prototyping with, is how to prompt these situations to happen organically. One thing that we think about in our design is, will people still have fun with this when they don't know what it's for? You know, because you can design an amazing exhibit element, but if people don't know how to use it or what it's for, it ends up not getting used. So for us, we have 2-year-olds who come in and they pack those presents full of whatever we have in the space, and they're not using it as intended, but they're still practicing science skills on their level. So will this fit in the box? How many things can I fit in the box? Can I carry this once it gets so heavy? It's just been like this amazing creative challenge to find things that can exist on multiple levels.
Multiple skill levels, multiple ages, say, what do you say, 2 to 5, roughly?
Probably 2 to 8 or 10.
Okay.
So.
And being able to have a diversity of skills. One of the things that I appreciate about the museum is it's a space for people with developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because it's very inclusive. Is that something that you consider as you begin to design these things?
Since that is my background, that kind of is the arch for everything. It's access. What are the access points for this? How can you engage with this object or this activity on a multitude of levels? So, for example, we have this activity that is called it's a theme called the Physics Kitchen, and it's an exploration of physics through an Italian kitchen. And so we're talking about pizza doughs spinning, we're talking about meatballs rolling. We have an activity where a chef has dropped their ingredients and we're trying to see whether they roll or slide down the ramp. Like I said, things have to exist in all these different realms to where it's like a 2-year-old playing with it, or an 8-year-old, or somebody who's unsupervised, or somebody that has a facilitator there. So when it's by itself, a lot of the vegetables just move over to the plates and they become things that people eat, right? They do their play acting there. And when there's a parent who wants to read the prompt about testing the vegetables, then that action can take place. So much thought goes into how what we have can be accessed by any skill level. Another of the interesting things about design in this space is that it has to work when some or all of it is missing. So if you've been up through Mind Bender Mansion, all the activity pieces are like in a table, and it's pretty obvious this stuff belongs here. Because we're designing these immersive experiences in the Science Kitchen, for example, we have our Five Senses party going on right now, and as part of that, we have a little ice cream stand where kiddos can sell ice cream. I've seen actual money change hands in space. But what I did not anticipate was that they would sell everything that we own. And so I will walk up there and I'll be like, oh, where are all the cupcakes? Where are all the placemats? Yesterday, there was nothing on the tables. They were selling the tablecloths. So
entrepreneurial.
It was entrepreneurial. It was really amazing. So all that to say that having things continue to work when parts are missing is super important. We have an activity where during it's our insect picnic theme where we talk about the adaptations that insects have. We have one play space where it's little ants having a picnic and they're carrying food around on their bags. But we have another activity where it is beetles, little beetles that they can build homes for. As part of that, it's a comparison, making observations, making comparisons. As we were developing the activities with exhibits, I said, if we have a picture of this certain beetle on there for them to try to find, that beetle will never be on that table. They're never going to be able to find it because it just won't be there. It'll be in the waterway. It'll be in the big backyard. So we had to put specific work into the design to make it work with what was around. So we have to go very kind of generic on what we're looking for. Can you find a beetle with this shape? 9 times out of 10, there will continue to be a beetle with that shape around. So that's been another challenge in the creativity of trying to make this immersive space where kiddos of all ages can explore the science concepts.
Sybil Holmes, it requires a flexible mind to put together such a flexible space.
It's been fun. And I think I'm a good person for the job because my theory is always like, I want people to walk into the room and say, what is going on here? I just wanted to be kind of weird and out there, but engaging. When I see families come in and just immediately start playing with the items that are there and having these really rich experiences together, I feel like I'm onto something. I'll give you an example. For our physics kitchen, I have been wanting to do this spaghetti interactive where we take pieces of yarn, turn it into spaghetti. It has meatballs on top. My idea was it was going to go in this sensory table and the kids would use the scoops and the colanders and play with the spaghetti. I mean, needless to say, there was spaghetti on every square inch of the entire Discovery. So it just goes everywhere. And our educators are like, please, can we not do the spaghetti anymore? And every time I think about not doing it, I walk into the kitchen and I watch these families playing together. You have grandma and grandpa at the table, the auntie at the table. You've got this 2-year-old who is just serving everybody wearing a chef hat. And I'm like, oh, I have to find a way to make this work. So our next prototype involves blobs of spaghetti yarn that are sort of fastened together so that they don't turn into a million little pieces everywhere. So it's all a prototype process of seeing what works, seeing what families like, seeing how we can layer those science skills on top of the play that's happening. So it's super fun.
I love it. And I love the fact that science and discovery is for everyone at all times. It's for children, the young 2-year-old, all the way up to somebody that's over 100 years old. Science and discovery is for everyone.
It is. It's how we survive as a species. You know, you have to start tracking those patterns. You have to start understanding cause and effect and how the world works. So working with the early childhood crowd is the most fun because you can watch their little wheels ticking. It's a lot of fun.
Sybil Holmes, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you about the Discovery Zone and all of the intense thinking it takes to create something that's worth discovering.
Thank you so much for your time, and make sure you come up and see us.
I'm dying to now.
The next chaos that we have going on.
I'm gonna go up and play with the stuff by myself.